Now, more of That Is Good to Know. Continuing with today's program, here's Jeff Stanislow.
Hello, and welcome back to That Is Good to Know with your host, Jeff Stanislow. We appreciate you spending your morning here with us today in Tampa. If you're tuning in on AM 1040, WHBO, our favorite place for News Talk Tampa. So visit our website, www.thatisgoodtoknow.com, and we have a couple tickets that we're going to be giving away for the Valspar Championship. Just sign up for the newsletter, and we'll get you into those, and you might get a pair of tickets for this show. We're picking up again on our conversation with Heather DeGrave, and she's a partner at Walters, Levine, and DeGrave, and we're talking about contracts. So we finished up talking a little bit about mitigation and arbitration, and the variable, I guess the wild card in there is you may think you have an ironclad defense or a case, but when you start looking at judges and jurors and things of that nature, you have to evaluate some risk. Would that be a good assessment, Heather?
Yeah, absolutely. That in any relationship and business relationships, which are usually contractual relationships, if they go south and you end up going to litigation, despite you doing everything right, despite you having all of the testimony, despite you having all of the documents in your favor, there is a chance, however small it may be, that you will not be the winner, that you will not be the prevailing party. And then you'll be paying a lot of money as a result. So there is always risk. That's not to say that there's not always the chance of a reward. And that's why we enter into contracts, because we make good business decisions, that this is in our favor. And we just want to make sure that we're memorializing the terms and conditions ahead of time. But even in the best, even with the best contracts, there are those risks.
So you brought up a good thing that I wanted to dive in a little bit more, and that's fees. You know, not only fees in the contract for the, you know, the product or the service, but, you know, in the contract, you need to define attorney's fees and things of that nature in the event of a case. Can you dive a little bit into that? And you're listening to Heather DeGrave from Walters, Levine, and DeGrave.
Yes. And so you'll see in a lot of contracts, especially the lengthy contracts that have a lot of details, you'll see a section or maybe more than one section that deal with who's going to be responsible for paying for attorney's fees and for court costs in the event of litigation. And so you want to take a look at that. And you want to see how those terms are defined. Here in Florida, we have a law that says if one side is entitled to prevailing party attorney's fees, the other side is also entitled to prevailing party attorney's fees, depending on which one of us is the prevailing party. That's not the case in every state. So you'll sometimes see in contracts a very one-sided prevailing party attorney's fee provision that would only give one side prevailing parties. And even here in Florida, the award of attorney's fees depends very much on how the contract is worded. So if it is worded to only apply in certain situations but not in others, then even if you are the prevailing party attorney party, you may not be awarded your fees and costs.
And then that's something to really consider, especially if you're thinking about entering into a contract. You know, how does that play out, especially if you think there's any type of risk of something not working out in regards to the relationship? And taking a step backwards and just like the relationship itself, I would imagine that, you know, there's usually the paper side and then there's the people side. So can you talk to us a little bit about the mentality or some of the things that you kind of see that could be a red flag that, you know, this might not be something you want to enter? Where do some of these contract negotiations break down? You're listening to Heather DeGrave from Walters, Levine, and DeGrave. And this is Jeff Stanislow, your host at That Is Good to Know.
Well, and you mentioned risk, and that's, I think, where you need to evaluate that. If someone is a little bit riskier in terms of you're not sure that this is going to work out, it might be an investment that you're not sure is going to work out, or just a situation that lends itself to there being problems down the line, you want to make sure that you have a contract that accounts for that risk. And so if you're entering into negotiations with someone or for a project that seems particularly risky, and then you're being handed a contract that looks very one-sided in their favor, and it doesn't look like it protects you very much, that would be a major red flag. The riskier the situation, I think the more you want to account for all of the contingencies and make sure that they're in writing ahead of time.
It's important to know. I mean, I think when it comes down to entering into a business agreement is the risk propensity. Also, you have to understand your responsibilities and what you can, what type of risk that you can take on as the person that's signing, and the risk factors of the other side being able to deliver on their side of the table. How about any good resources for our listeners here on That Is Good to Know to check out, maybe about the company? You know, where do you go? Let's say, take the lawyer hat off and you're thinking about entering, you're doing a remodel and you have a company there. Where do you kind of go? Where's your go-to spot to kind of do a little research on the company before you're signing that contract?
Well, there are a few places, and you can, and fortunately, here in Florida in particular, you can do a lot of online research, a lot of legal documents, a lot of regulatory documents are available through simple online searches. Here in Florida, we have SunBiz, which is the Division of Corporations website. So you can look up a business and you can see how long it's been in business, if it's maintaining its annual reports that it has to file every year. If it has a history of failing to file its annual report and then filing it late, getting reinstated, that doesn't sound like a business that's really crossing its dotting its I's and crossing its T's, as they say. With respect to companies that have to be licensed, including contractors, there is myfloridalicense.com, and you can look up someone's license and see if their license is still in good standing, and you can see if they have any history of complaints against them as well.
So some good resources for you there, Tampa. This is Jeff Stanislow, and you're listening to That Is Good to Know. Visit our website, www.thatisgoodtoknow.com. We're going to have information from our special guest here, Heather DeGrave from Walters, Levine, and DeGrave. So you mentioned a little bit about risk, and one way to maybe mitigate risk is something called limited damages. Can you tell us what limited damages and how that might work in a scope of a contract?
Yeah, so and this happens a lot in construction contracts, but also in others as well. There'll be some provision that says that your damages are limited to the cost that you have incurred, or something along those lines. There's also, it might be considered might be called a waiver of consequential damages. And so you're limited to the damages that directly compensate you for your loss that you sustained as a result of the breach, but not for any indirect damages that you might suffer, which might include lost profits. So if you are someone who is providing services, for instance, and the other side wrongfully terminates the contract, under case law, you're typically entitled to your lost profits, which are the profits that you would have sustained if they had followed through on the contract. But if there's a waiver of consequential damages, then you have waived your right to recover those. And so then you're limited to just the costs that you have incurred. So depending on whether you might have those consequential damages, you're going to want to look to see if there is, in fact, that limitation of your damages or a waiver of consequential damages or special damages.
And if you don't want to do that on your own, Heather DeGrave will be happy to look at your contract.
I do that all the time.
Walters, Levine, and DeGrave, talking contract laws and what have you. And we're talking a little bit about limited damages. So we talk about breach of contract. There's also terms in contracts that often allow like a remedy to a breach. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. And that goes along with the waiver of consequential damages. Oftentimes there will be other languages that will provide for not just damages, but maybe injunctive relief. Or liquidated damages. So it'll say, we don't know we can't possibly know right at this moment. It could be substantial. So we don't know. And so what we're going to do is we're going to mitigate our risk by determining ahead of time, if there is this breach, what will be the way that we calculate damages. And here is the formula that we have in place to calculate liquidated damages. So that's one way. Also, like I said, injunctive relief. So that comes up often in business purchase agreements, employment agreements, anything where you might have an interest in preventing the other side from taking the information they've learned from you and competing. There will be some provisions that allow for the entry of an injunction to prevent them from doing that.
Talking with Heather DeGrave from Walters, Levine & DeGrave, providing some great information for our listeners about contract law. So my understanding on this, the breach and the limited damages. So like if you're entering into a contract, someone build you a building in regards to that, and there's delays or material delays, things of that nature, and your building doesn't get opened at the time and you're, going to open up a pizzeria or something like that. Mm-hmm. There's some limited things you can't say that, okay, the building didn't get done on time, so therefore I lost $1 million a month in pizza sales. And so does that, where that comes into play?
Yeah. So with respect to the waiver of consequential damages, that's absolutely where that comes into play. But also with respect to liquidated damages, yes, that's where that comes into play. That at this point, it's going to be difficult, if not impossible, for us to put a number to that, but let's do that through this liquidated damages. So we anticipate that we would lose, $10,000 a day or something like that in revenue. And so therefore, or in profits. And so therefore we're going to set that as this is how it's going to be calculated. It may turn out that it was far less, or it may turn out that it was substantially more. And so that way, both sides of the equation know this is what it's going to be.
So, yeah, understanding that, the whole purpose of the contract is to get the building done on time. Tell us a little bit about, do you got a kind of a crazy story, one that sticks in your mind that you went to trial or helped out on or something like that, that would be interesting conversation for people to learn?
Well, I think one thing that I would like people to learn is the idea of the gentleman's handshake, because it is something that that we've just heard. We've all heard about it. Oh, well, and in construction, it comes up a lot, especially when something starts getting delayed or when there needs to be a change and it wasn't written in the contract in the first place. And they say, well, look, I need you to just get this done. Don't worry, I'll pay you. And the reality is that most contracts, especially most subcontracts, have a provision that says unless it's in writing, it's not enforceable. But they say, oh, we have this gentleman's handshake. And so just know that gentleman's handshake is not enforceable in litigation. Now, it may be enforceable morally or in the business world, if someone gets a reputation for not following through on those sorts of agreements, word gets around. But the reality is that in the context of a court case or an arbitration case, that's not going to be enforceable. And I don't have any particularly crazy story on that, but I have dealt with that on I can't tell you how many occasions.
This is Jeff Stanislow, and you're listening to That Is Good to Know. You can find Heather DeGrave. We'll put her information up on our website, thatisgoodtoknow.com. She is a partner with Walters, Levine, and DeGrave, and sharing some great information about contract law. At what point in time, as let's say a small business owner, when do they kind of need to have a contract? You talked about gentlemen's handshakes or a handshake deal or a back of a napkin agreement or things of that nature. Is there a particular monetary amount where you kind of say, okay, well, we need to move this into a contract?
I wouldn't say there's a particular monetary amount. I think that obviously if it's a lower dollar amount, you're not necessarily going to want to hire a lawyer, although I disagree with that, because even if it's not a lower dollar amount at the beginning, when things go south, it can become expensive very quickly. And so you may want to go ahead and have a, if there's any kind of risk of of a substantial loss that you'd want to have it in writing sooner rather than later. Gentlemen's handshakes are not enforceable in court, but on the other hand, we do them all the time. That's just the reality.
Certainly. And I guess, you know, a lot of it too is like, you know, a lot of it might be, hey, I have this idea and I think it's going to be a big idea. Let's get going on it. We'll do a handshake deal. And the person kind of like, okay, let's do it. And they get going on the project or the service or provider. And next thing you know, that person's idea is, you know, thinks it's a $1 million idea and it never comes to fruition because someone didn't deliver on their end. We're kind of dabbling now here, maybe in like a business agreement between two parties, like starting a business. And I wanted to kind of shift gears and get your thoughts on that aspect of it. Contracts with inside the company and, you know, joint partnerships or what have you. What is probably the best way, you know, that you kind of help advise your clients when they're thinking about starting a business with a partner?
I think that you need to think about what your risks are and what kinds of contracts you're going to want to have in place, what kinds of agreements you're going to want to have in place in writing from the beginning. You know, you talked about the $1 million idea. If it really is a $1 million idea and you didn't have a non-disclosure agreement, you're not protected from someone taking that idea and moving it on to the next person who's willing to pay them for it. With respect to small businesses, so many of them are families or just people who've known each other. And as long as everyone's making money, everyone's happy. And then as soon as they're not, it turns into really ugly, emotionally devastating affairs that an operating agreement or a shareholders agreement or a letter of intent even, which is not an enforceable contract, but it has the makings of one, would have helped. So get things in writing, especially in situations like that where you're going to lose your family if you end up in a dispute. Let's get something in writing before it becomes like that.
Certainly. And that's good advice. And you're listening to Heather DeGrave from Walters Levin and DeGrave here at That Is Good to Know. This is your host, Jeff Stanislow. Kind of moving into that space, like, you know, when someone is thinking of an idea or someone wants to go into business with each other, just your recommendation is to start getting some things in writing, even if it's like a letter of intent to start, maybe defining some milestones for the business. But it's actually to do an operating agreement is the, you know, a logical next step, and then incorporating. Can you talk to us a little bit about incorporating a business and, you know, what your recommendations are? I know you can do it, you know, through SunBiz, but like the type of entities, whether it's a corporation, a limited liability company or something of that nature?
Yeah. And actually we have an attorney in our office, Alan Gonzalez, who advises clients all the time on that. You know, whether you want to have an LLC, which is a limited liability company, or whether you want to have a corporation, or whether you might want to have a partnership, you know, what is the best entity form that meets your needs? That's something that that you need to look at. An LLC has advantages in that there isn't stock. You know, if you're concerned that one member may have judgments entered against them, you don't necessarily want some stranger judgment creditor coming in on that. But on the other hand, there are situations in which the corporate form is the preferred form. So you want to talk with a business asset planning lawyer to discuss what would be the best form for you.
Certainly. Heather, thanks for sharing that information. And Heather's firm, Walters Levin and DeGrave, has expertise in many areas. And, you know, mentioned about corporate structure and what have you. A good idea is to probably consult a CPA as well on in regards to that, because the attorney can set it up. And the CPA, you got to tax ramifications and how things get set up with the IRS and how you declare, you know, you're filing, whether you're filing like a subchapter S corporation. This is Jeff Stanislow. You're listening to That Is Good to Know. And our special guest guest today is Heather DeGrave from Walters Levin and DeGrave. Don't forget, if you want to go to the Valspar Championship, just go to www.thatisgoodtoknow.com, enter your email address in our newsletter at the bottom of the page, and you may get a couple tickets to go see the Valspar Championship, courtesy of our friend Tracy West at Valspar. So Heather, as we kind of wind some things down here, just, you know, good rules of thumb when it comes down to contracts, and you get a contract in your hand and or a client that's wanting to do a contract, what are some of the first things that you kind of really start thinking about?
Well, again, I think looking at, is it clearly defined what I'm giving and what the other side is giving me? I think that's the first thing you want to look at. I think you want to look at, do I understand this contract? You know, that you'll sometimes be given contracts that are just full of language that people call legalese, and that doesn't necessarily meet your needs, there may be no other choice. And so then you want to look at, let's talk to a lawyer. Let's look at with this lawyer. And like you said, perhaps also in certain cases, a CPA or a licensure expert, something like that. Let's look and make sure that this arrangement, this relationship we're entering into, and specifically this contract, meets my needs and protects me, so that I know what I'm getting into as we go into the future.
So when you're writing the contract, it's, you know, you look to protect yourself, and you also want to protect your client. If you're, you know, if your intent is goodwill and to deliver a product or service for, you know, stated fees and do a good job and operate a good business. Talking a little bit about, we talked briefly in the first half about technology and what have you. And I just wanted to shift gears a little bit to some of the legal services like LegalZoom and things of that nature. What are your thoughts on that, you know, for, you know, people to get a subscription there, maybe get a contract going, changing the names or finding an existing contract on the web? Do you recommend, like, okay, you kind of like this, or you have one that you've signed before that you liked? Do you get those and then craft your own with your clients? Is that a good strategy?
You can do that. And sometimes it helps, at least with inspiration as to, yes, this is what I like, this is what I don't like. But ultimately, those are that one size fits all approach. And when you're looking at a contract that is going to protect you, especially if you're forming a business or if you're entering into a major relationship that is going to impact your life, you don't want to rely on that. You want to hire a lawyer. You want to make sure that it meets the laws of your state and it meets your needs, that it's not that one size fits all approach. So I definitely think that resources like that are a good jumping off point, but they should not be your final result.
Fantastic. And you're listening to Heather DeGrave from Walters Levine and DeGrave. We thank you for spending our time with us today. And Tampa, we hope you got some great knowledge. And like I said, the whole goal of this show is, you know, after you listen, you say, hey, that was good to know. Again, Heather, thank you very much. And we appreciate it for coming and spending your time here.
Thank you very much for having me. It was a delight.
Very good. That is it for this show with Jeff Stanislaw, your host of That Is Good to Know. Again, visit our website, www.thatisgoodtoknow.com. And don't forget, we got some Valspar tickets. Just sign up for our newsletter, and we might be reaching out to you and getting you a couple tickets to the event. All right, Tampa, that's it for this weekend. Take care and have a good one.